From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on June 3rd, 2024, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. At the top, we have a little bit of a programming note for you, a little FYI. We will have live primary night coverage with results and analysis on June 11th, starting at 8 p.m., an hour after polls close. You'll be able to watch us on SCE TV channels statewide, and we'll also be simulcast online on YouTube, Facebook, and South Carolina Public Radio statewide. We'll bring you a full lead episode recapping all the primary action on Wednesday, June 12th. So again, we won't have a pod on June 11th because that's primary day. We'll have all the stuff for you on the next day's podcast. Now enough about next week. Let's talk about this week and this episode. We're looking at what's going on at the State House to the campaign trail this week. Senator Tim Scott was on Fox News Sunday talking about former President Donald Trump's guilty convictions. We look at the special session happening this Wednesday with friend of the pod, Myon Schechter, with South Carolina Public Radio. And as we continue our look at hurricane season, we dive into the latest research on climate change with two University of South Carolina professors. Now, while the climate continues to change, one thing that has remained the same is our voicemail box. Yes, 803-563-7169. In fact, we have the same greeting on that voicemail box from 2020.
2020.
It's completely outdated. Tiger King references. I mean, come on. You gotta call just to hear that little time capsule. And while you're there, leave a message up to 3 minutes. 803-563-7169. Give us your hot takes, your parental advice for A.T. Shire, Proud Papa there. And anything else going on with you this summer. It's summertime. 803-563-7169. Let's look at what's on tap this week, starting with the State House. What? I thought we were post-signy die. Well, we are, but that means there are some things that they're still taking up. Like we said, what's going to happen in June. In fact, lawmakers are back in session Wednesday to elect the next state Supreme Court justice, which we know will be State Appeals Court Judge Letitia Verdon. She became the frontrunner soon after lawmakers were able to start issuing their commitments ahead of the election. Verdon will replace retiring Chief Justice Donald Beatty, the lone person of color on the bench right now. Verdon will become the third woman to serve on the five-member high court, which will soon be all white. Justice John Kittredge, who is the most senior justice, will succeed Beatty as Chief Justice. Also on Wednesday, there will be several conference committees. That's, again, three House and three Senate members together hashing out some details over bills that have already passed both chambers, including one bill, H. 3728, that critical race theory bill, which has been in a conference committee now for over a year. So expect to see some movement on Wednesday, question mark. There are also bills dealing with wild turkey and flounder, as well as blue crab. From the blue crabs of the coast to the fat cats in Washington, that's right, we're going up 95 to D.C., where Congress is back in session this week. Yes, a lot to do up there, a lot to do. The governor, we're still waiting on his schedule to see what he's up to this week, but I can maybe predict some ceremonial bill signings, perhaps. Looking at the 2024 campaign trail, President Joe Biden will head to France, bonjour, this week to mark the 80th anniversary of the D-Day invasion in Normandy and pay a state trip to Paris. On Friday, Biden will deliver remarks on freedom and democracy at Pointe du Hoc, France. If I said that wrong, call in. Maybe it's Pointe du Hoc. You tell me, Mecconard. And Saturday, French President Emmanuel Macron hosts Biden for a state visit, like I said, in Paris. On Sunday, Trump will hold a campaign rally in Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas. On the economic calendar, on Friday, we get May unemployment numbers.
Data.
Look forward to that. But let's rewind to this past weekend with the Sunday shows where Senator Tim Scott was on Fox News Sunday with Shannon Bream, where she asked him about how Trump's guilty convictions will affect his campaign and how they need to reach out to folks who have been turned off by Trump.
Without any question, what we've seen is never Trumpers calling me and saying, Tim, I'm on the bandwagon now. I've seen this two-tier justice system working against the President of the United States. It could work against me, too. I've seen donors who've been on the sidelines this entire process now jumping in. One of the reasons why we saw more than $50 million raised in 24 hours. But you're 100% right. The issues that are going to drive the results of this November 5th election will be, can Donald Trump close the southern border? The answer is he already has closed the southern border. Can he bring inflation down under 2%? The answer is it was 1.4% when he left office. Can he create jobs for the poorest Americans? Good news is he created more than 7 million jobs, with the highest percentage going to women, African Americans, Hispanics, and Asians. What we know about 4 years under Donald Trump is we had low unemployment, low inflation, high enthusiasm, law and order in our streets, and we've had the exact opposite under Joe Biden. We've had incredibly crushing inflation, leading to high interest rates, crime in the poorest communities, devastating single mothers like the one that raised me, and we've had the greatest invasion in American history across our southern border, left wide open, unsafe, because Joe Biden, on day one, started unraveling border security put in place by Donald Trump.
Lawmakers are back this week for a brief legislative session, like I said, to elect the next state Supreme Court justice, which is already a foregone conclusion, like I said. That's because when it became clear where things were going, Judge Jocelyn Newman and Judge Blake Hewitt dropped out, leaving appeals court judge Letitia Verdon, a white woman, set to be elected by acclamation when the House and Senate hold a joint session on Wednesday. For a little bit more on this, we have South Carolina Public Radio's Mayon Schechter. Mayon Schechter, what a great name. Hello, Mayon.
Hello, Gavin. Always great to be here.
So, Mayon, we are back in session this week. We were telling folks that we were going to be coming back throughout June, little bits here and there, just to take up some remaining business. So this week, we're talking about what's going on with the state Supreme Court race. Obviously, things have kind of already fallen into place, so there's no big surprise here. But just tell us about this process. We've been walking people through it, kind of summarizing how we got here. But just kind of give us a little bit of a lay of the land here.
So we expect the legislature to do really a whole lot of nothing on Wednesday, with the exception of this, just this little thing called the state Supreme Court. Have you heard of it?
Ever heard of it?
So the vacancy has opened up for a couple of reasons. One, you have to go back to Chief Justice Donald Beatty is retiring this year because of the state's 72 years old mandatory retirement age for judges. Lawmakers have already elected his successor, and that is Justice John Kittredge. So that opens up a vacancy. The Judicial Merit Selection Commission, JMSC, holds hearings. Three candidates were found qualified and nominated. They were Judges Blake Hewitt of Conway, Judge Jocelyn Newman of Columbia, and Letitia Verdon of Greenville. And it takes a while for the window to open, which is when those candidates can solicit support from lawmakers, or when lawmakers can actually give their support. But that's really sort of the tell in this whole thing, right? You have 170 lawmakers. You need the majority of that 170. So if you don't have it, you're probably going to back out, because it's less embarrassing than perhaps showing up day of and losing in front of everybody, especially if at some point you want another promotion on the bench. So Judge Jocelyn Newman, who was the only Black candidate, also a Black woman, she dropped out first. She did not have enough legislative support. Soon after, Blake Hewitt dropped out, and now, obviously, Letitia Verdon is the sole candidate. So, as you've probably mentioned, and as you all know, that means that South Carolina will no longer have an all-male bench. We will have a woman on the bench. We won't be the only Supreme Court in the country with an all-male bench. But it does mean that we will have an all-white bench, which more than a dozen states don't have a Black justice on the court. And I think it's more than 20 states that don't even have someone of color on the bench. So South Carolina will no longer be alone in some respects, but it is striking, especially in a state that has more than 26% of its population is African American.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because we did see a lot of backlash when we did see Gary Hill get on the court replacing former Justice Kay Hearn, who was the last female justice on the court. She was the second female justice on the court following Judge Jean Toll, who was also chief justice during her time on the court as well. So we are kind of pivoting back. There was a lot of blowback to that. Can we infer anything from this commitment to this, to Judge Verdon, as being a response to that? Or do we think that there's some more to her background? Obviously, during the JMSC hearings, they don't ask you, how do you feel about abortion? How do you feel about, you know, states' rights or certain things? it's more just to qualify them for the position to make sure that they check all the boxes. So do we know if there's maybe a little bit more of a political leaning here, or is it more just they think she's qualified and she's also a woman?
Right. Well, I mean, I think there are several factors. I think, first of all, when you looked at the three candidates who came out, Newman, Hewitt, and Verdin, it was pretty obvious, I think, to anyone who has watched the legislature over the last year that Verdin was going to be the likeliest person to be elected. One, because Blake Hewitt perhaps doesn't have as much experience. I mean, they both sit on the Court of Appeals, but he doesn't have as much experience as she does. But also Newman, the challenge with Newman was, and during her hearing and Verdin's hearing went, I would say, incredibly smooth. I mean, there wasn't any controversial or issues that were raised. Newman, on the other hand, faced questions about Richland County's caseload. And, you know, you'll remember that she also ruled the state's execution methods law, firing squad, electric chair unconstitutional. And lawmakers don't usually look too kindly on their laws getting overturned. So I think that's one part. It sort of was out in the open written. And I also think, you know, again, given the fact that the state has undergone so much criticism over the last year over having an all-male bench, that probably led to it. I would also add that, look, South Carolina's legislature has gotten more conservative, especially after the previous Supreme Court with Cahern overturned a 6-week abortion ban. There's been this intense focus back on the state Supreme Court and ensuring that it, one, kind of represents what the legislature wants, but I mean, more so that it doesn't overturn laws that the legislature passes. And, you know, it's, the state Supreme Court obviously deals with matters that you don't normally see in the headlines. Mm-hmm. Over the last year, they've dealt with abortion, executions, private school vouchers. And so these are big, big laws that lawmakers do not want overturned.
And then, Mayon, just kind of wrapping up here, because we have been talking a lot about judicial reform because of a law that was spurred by the 6-week ban that was overturned, which has now been, of course, upheld ever since they passed a new version of that last August. When it comes to judicial reform, how does that play into what could have happened here? Obviously, it didn't get passed this year, but there was some work to get changes to the Judicial Merit Selection Committee process. How would that have affected this process if it was upheld?
Well, first of all, that bill is still in conference committee. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've seen any kind of scheduling on it yet. So the two sides, three in the House, three in the Senate, are still hashing out differences over it. Well, what we would have seen is, I think the biggest thing is the three-candidate cap. So right now, only three candidates can be nominated out of the JMSC for full consideration by the General Assembly. And there were six candidates who ran. And mm-hmm. so depending on whatever the legislature decides that cap looks like, which is included in both bills, I think it goes beyond the three-candidate cap. We could have had more candidates hit the floor for consideration. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean, say it was six, all six candidates would have made it onto the floor. I think some would probably have dropped out before, but nevertheless, most of them could have been forwarded out to the floor. Also, the JMSC bills give the governor some nominees to the JMSC because right now there's been so much criticism about the fact that the legislature just really controls that 10-member panel. So we would have seen more gubernatorial appointments to it. Now, hard to say, though, whether that would have changed the dynamic at all. I think the three-candidate cap is probably going to be the biggest factor in maybe what this race wound up shaping like. But again, hard to know.
And I guess just depending, too, because the Senate wanted the House to be able to, they wanted each chamber to be able to have a majority of each chamber be the deciding factor, too, when it
the
came
Senate.
Down to, yeah, the Senate did. So, because if you got 124 folks in the House, you know, that is like an outsized value. They can have the sway in these races versus, like, you know, the 46 senators who are just like, oh, I guess our votes don't matter. So they were trying to equalize that a little bit more, too.
Right. The Senate wants more say in who becomes a judge. I mean, obviously, the House looks at that and says, well, you guys get to pick the cabinet.
You get to confirm.
So this is like the one power we have, although some would argue this is a huge power and maybe arguably an even bigger power. So
that'll be settled at conference committee, right?
Correct.
Mayon Schechter, thank you very much.
Thank you, Gavin.
You You know it, I know it, hurricane season is officially here. Yes, let's all just hope for the best this year, but plan for the worst, as we always do. Now, in our previous episode, you heard from South Carolina Emergency Management Division Director Kim Stenson about state preparations for what NOAA is predicting to be an above-average hurricane season. Our changing climate affects everything in our lives and also the power of storms. Complete with rising sea levels that facilitate greater storm surge, coupled with inland flooding in low-lying areas that have been overdeveloped, equals just some of the current threats that the season poses. Welcome to life in 2024, especially y'all down the Lowcountry. Now, to look more into climate change, I spoke with two University of South Carolina professors, Dr. Kirsten Dow and Dr. Greg Carboni. I opened by asking Dr. Carboni about the hurricane forecast and climate change.
Both the international and the domestic reports on climate change are quite clear that we have seen a signal, particularly in the post-World War II period, for increasing temperatures across the world and across the country. And those increases last year were extraordinary in the sense that we had an El Nino year. At the same time, we have these increasing trends of temperature change. So the records every month nearly last year were extraordinary. And so we're definitely seeing some very clear signs of temperature rise and other kinds of expressions of climate change.
And when you see that, what's your take? I mean, these are red flags cropping up all around. Do you think people are taking it as seriously as they need to be?
Probably not. I mean, I think you can hear things very frequently, and if they're not happening in your backyard, then it's difficult to make the connection. Global temperature changes of a half degree Celsius or degree Fahrenheit are extraordinary kinds of rises in terms of an average global temperature. That's a lot of energy, right? And so when we see those kinds of changes, it truly means something significant, but it may not resonate with somebody on the ground, right? That a half degree doesn't seem so much, but expanded across the whole world, of course, it's a big amount.
And then we hear people talking about, oh, it's hotter, it must be climate change, or it's a colder winter, or it's raining more. Dr. Dow, what do you take away from that when it comes to the urgency of this situation and what we're seeing maybe in South Carolina when it comes to higher temperatures and forecasted higher temperatures here?
When people say it was warmer, it was colder, I say, tell me about the clothes in your closet. Do you have winter clothes? Do you have summer clothes? You got some in front, you got some packed away, but things change, right? And that variability is normal. We can unpack it if we need the sweater, but we have it there so that because we know we're going to need it. There's variation around this. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I think it's probably time to look at these bigger trends. Mm-hmm. And as you were talking, I was thinking, one of the real challenges seems to me in taking it seriously is what we're finding is a lot of people are thinking about it and they're talking about making plans. And what they're seeing is that there's not a lot of implementation yet. And it's a different kind of problem to make big infrastructure decisions without the benefit of the greater confidence we've had. We used to be able to say, oh, history is going to tell us more or less what we're going to expect. Mm-hmm. And that's just no longer best practices. And that makes the decisions a little more complicated. So I think people are taking it much more seriously. Mm-hmm. It's what are best practices in this changing world kind of question that I think is slowing some things down.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you hear policymakers talk, when you see people, pundits on the news talk, I mean, yes, they're talking about it. At least that's, you know, further along than where we came in maybe in the early 2000s when everyone was saying this doesn't exist. Yeah. Now I think they've come to this understanding that, yes, we know that climate change exists. Yes, we know, you know, humans caused a lot of this.
So the question is, all right, last time we talked about urban heat islands. Mm-hmm. Our city's hot. Our city is dangerously hot in places. And one of the clearest things about climate change, other than sea level rise, is that we're expecting warmer temperatures. And so we've got to start thinking about a different kind of future and planning for it, making smart investments. I'm looking at, like, let's plant, you know, if we're going to plant trees, the city's already doing this. They're planting trees that are going to last under hotter temperatures. Mm-hmm. And we're going to start making decisions that have that planning horizon we usually haven't had to work on. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited to see the experiment starting. Yeah. And people asking new questions.
Better integration and understanding is, yeah, what you need to do, because it's not getting any cooler, yeah, right?
No.
And we're always looking, you know, and this question about variability and change is really interesting, because we're always, as climate scientists, always interested in understanding the trends that are going on, the signal, mm-hmm, from the noise. And the noise is the interannual year-to-year variability, which we always see. But the clearer that signal gets, the less noise you're going to see, right? Mm-hmm. So, and we have seen in the last 50 years, we have seen some trends, but the push that is the radiative change, the energy budget change, has been relatively small compared to the projections for the future. Mm-hmm. And so the signal-to-noise ratio, as we call it, is going to get much clearer in the upcoming decades. So if we haven't seen anything really strong yet, it's because the push hasn't been that strong, actually.
So Dr. Carbone, I want to just ask you a bit more about hurricane season. That's kind of the reason we're here today. What are we seeing right now when we look at, you know, sea level temperatures, sea level rise, the threat of greater storm surge, the stronger storms? What do you take away from when we see that forecast, what that means, and then just how people should be preparing for this, and are we going to see bigger storms, better
storms?
Sure.
Well, what we do know is the Atlantic is warm. It's anomalously warm. So it's, this unusual warmth that we've seen for the last several years at least, in really decade, has contributed to a number of things. More active hurricane seasons and heavier precipitation in some cases. Many of the big heavy precipitation events that we've seen in South Carolina were accompanied by above average sea surface temperatures, greater rates of evaporation, greater moisture availability. And when you have hurricanes in the mix of all that, you've got something that's going to be able to lift that moisture and produce cumulonimbus clouds and heavy precipitation. If the hurricanes stall, as we saw with Florence, for example, then you get heavy precipitation for prolonged periods of time. And that's really what's led to some of the flooding events that we've had in the state. So it's a serious thing. I think the hurricane forecast, what makes it interesting this year is not, in addition to those warm sea surface temperatures, which we've had for the last decade, we now are entering into a La Nina season. Mm-hmm. And during La Ninas, the jet stream, the subtropical jet stream, is a little weaker, which means it will do a little less shearing of the tops of those storms, which I think is going to lead to an above average forecast.
And that's what kind of saved us last go around. Last hurricane season too, was a lot of that wind shear helped redirect a lot of those storms away from the coast.
During El Nino years, that's exactly the case as it was last year. Mm-hmm. So this year's going to be very interesting.
So Dr. Dow, what's your takeaway when we talk about the hurricane season here, what people need to know about it? And, you know, when we look at the effects of it, you're talking about Hurricane Florence in 2018, I believe that was, when we saw just dumping all that rain in the Carolinas, water coming down from North Carolina, really threatening our infrastructure, road infrastructure, and almost cut off the coast when it came to Horry County. What do you think people need to understand when it comes to the effects of these big storms, whether they're inland or on the coast?
So I think we need to understand that this adaptation to climate change is going to be an ongoing problem, and that it's time to start making investments in things that are going to be more resilient to this. This isn't, you can't build back as it was. You need to build back better. And we've got a state resilience office, and we're moving in the direction of doing a bunch of things on that. But you kind of want to thread the needle. I don't want this to be scary.
Sure.
But it's super serious. It's like if your doctor said, hey, I need you to go to the specialist and look after this. We're at that point. Mm-hmm. It's time to be getting to the specialist and getting serious. It's no longer like, I'll do that next week.
You know, when you were just briefly talking about heat a moment ago, extreme heat is becoming one of the biggest threats that we're facing. You know, we're talking about global warming. Heat is a big issue there. 2023 was the hottest year on record globally, according to NOAA and NASA. And then adding to this long-term trend, that's the last 10 years have been the 10 hottest on record, you know, and this so far, April was also the 11th month in a row of record warmth for the world. So we need to see the specialist here, like you're saying, but no one seems to be trying to do much. Obviously, there are global efforts to do that, but this is a problem that we can't air condition our way out of either.
Right. One can say with our energy use, we could sort of air condition our way into it. And that's not the way through. Yeah. It's not the only factor by a long shot. But no, I think that raises a really good point. There are solutions out there that make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have to air condition our way. We can energy efficiency our way out of it. We can think about if you're renting a little bit of caulk, if you're thinking, if you've got a home, have you looked at your ductwork? Mm-hmm. A lot of people want to put solar panels on and say, I'm green. But really, you can leak out a lot of really high value energy into that crawl space where it does absolutely no good for anything but snakes and spiders. Mm-hmm. And if you're an animal lover, maybe that's what you want to do. But I know most of us care more about our budget.
Thanks to our guests. And if you guys want to watch that entire interview and more shows and great content, go take your web browser over to youtube.com/South Carolina ETV. There's a lot of great content. It's just a slash, not Guns N' Roses. It's on your keyboard. youtube.com/ETV South Carolina ETV. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news, Did you hear me say L-I-L instead of little? Little break from the news, A.T. Shire, producer of the podcast.
Little, yes. Okay, well, I just love that we're here taking this break. Gavin's got his Aldi cup.
It's double wall vacuum sealed.
Oh, it keeps the cold cold and the hot hot. I don't know if you ever heard that.
Ice is the same ice from last Friday.
Mm-hmm. He's not a... What's
a
the
Stanley?
Big
I'm not a
He's
Stanley
not a,
mom.
Not a Stanley mom, but
I don't make enough money to own a Stanley.
He's Aldi all the way through. He's got the shoes to prove it, or the slides. Anyway,
still in the box with
still
tags.
In the box. Okay,
I got the crossbody though.
He's rocking that crossbody. It's like frickin' Mary Poppins purse. He's got everything in there. Lamps, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's bottomless. Anyway, Gavin, what is not bottomless, but we still have stuff, is the hopper.
Mm-hmm.
There's some stuff in there. We're getting some good calls. So we're gonna double dip. Whatever.
Okay.
I don't
whatever.
Care.
Hey,
you know
whatever.
What?
Whatever. It's a little double dip.
Nah, no scam on my back. I don't care. So you ready?
Stock buyback.
You ready?
Yes, please.
Okay, here we go.
Hi, Gavin. Hi, AT. I'm calling with some advice for AT. For every vehicle that you travel with your darling baby in, pack a small bag with a change of undergarments and shirt and socks and shorts for yourself, for your baby mama, and for your child. Because believe me, there's going to be a day when you are all out and somebody has an accident and you're all going to need to change. That is my advice for you. Hopefully you never need it. My name is Christine. And I've been listening for a long time, and I miss the snake alerts. So I hope you bring snake alerts back. Okay, bye.
Christine, thank you for that call. Oh, and what great advice for not just
parents
with newborns and toddlers, but for grown adults like myself. I'm going to have backup clothes in all my cars.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of adult diaper commercials these days. So, yeah, you're going to need that change as whenever you think you don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have a problem, okay?
That's why I still have a bunch of stuff on my back seat. You know, there might be a scarf, there might be a half zip. You never know, even in the hot summer months,
and
you might need that scarf.
Christine, I love the snake alert callback, okay?
That's
an OG listener.
Yeah, that's some lore right there.
And just for that, we're going to give you a commemorative snake alert right here, okay? Here we go, folks.
Stand by.
Here we go.
Snake alert.
Ron, they're in the studio!
I repeat.
Snake alert.
This is not a test, actually. They're actually, the snakes are breaking in.
Snake alert.
What?
Snake alert. Snake alert.
I don't know.
I can't remember why we had the snake alert in the first place.
It's so stupid.
It was a bit where we thought snakes were taking over the studio.
Well, I found a great klaxon sound.
You know,
and
yeah.
I was like, how do we use the klaxon? And the answer is snake alert.
We have so much lore on the podcast now that we can't even keep up with it.
There are scrolls, snakes,
the runes
alerts,
are just, we can't read all the runes.
All the runic languages. Anyway, Christine, thank you for calling. Please call back anytime.
Snake alert Christine.
Snake alert Christine, yeah.
That's how nicknames start.
That's how you get a nickname. Thank you, Christine. Anyway, Gavin, second dip. Are you ready for this one?
Yes.
Okay, I'm glad because I was going to do it anyway.
Snake.
Oh, wrong one. Wrong button, 18.
Sorry.
Jesus,
sorry.
Stressing me out
you
here.
You can't do that, okay?
No.
There are rules. State laws.
State laws almost.
Here we go. Second call.
Hey, guys. This is Matthew, councilman from Greenwood. I haven't called in a while. Just wanted to give you a couple updates. So I tried doing all the traveling this month, driving through Rocky Mountain National Park at the moment in Colorado, and then headed out to Switzerland in a couple weeks. That one's for work, though, so I'll get to see the Alps as well. I wanted to weigh in on this sandwich discussion because it seems like we're going down a slippery slope, and does that mean that we can fold pizza and call it a sandwich? Just throwing that out there. So anyways, congratulations to AT and also to Gavin. I guess I'll give you props as well for a good legislative session this year. Hope to talk to you guys again soon. And still hope you come out to Greenwood for a live show sometime. Talk to you later.
Matt, thank you for calling. Yes, we love hearing from you. Sounds like you're having some fun traveling around.
Seeing all the mountains.
Yeah.
Good for you.
I have been to Switzerland.
Yeah, brag.
Unbeknownst to folks, I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
Interlaken, beautiful.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. You want to go to Interlaken? They got the mountains. I did not see the
Matterhorn.
We did go to the Alps.
You saw an Alp?
Just one.
Okay, yeah.
When you get out there, though, and you're in the mountains, it is insane. You just look straight ahead, and your whole field of vision is full. Unless, mm-hmm. like, you look, even when you look up to the end of the sky, like, you just can't.
It's too many Alps. Honestly, too many Alps.
That's what I said.
You know what? I'm going to say less Alps.
I know Switzerland is neutral and so much stuff, but I got a hot take here for Switzerland. Get rid of some of the Alps.
Yeah, if you have so many Alps, it sort of takes away from each Alp. So
we went to the Schilthorn.
Mm-hmm.
Schilthorn, where actually—
I have no idea what these words are.
It's in Interlaken, which, again, great place to go.
Yep.
Beautiful. You know, people are like
spelunking,
hang gliding. Oh. A lot of hang gliders are out there doing stuff.
Mm.
Very cool. Perfect time of year to go.
So
with everybody else,
Matthew,
also,
if you're hang gliding through an Alp or two, hit us up.
And then we also went to Geneva.
Yeah, Geneva.
You know, I had to go. You know, do stuff with the UN. Do stuff with
they were demanding.
It was
you showed
a big
up.
Thing.
Yeah. You got
to
kiss the ring.
Time.
You got to kiss the ring. All politics podcasts got
to
show up.
It wasn't like a big thing on my to-do list. Got to go see Switzerland, but very glad that I got to go do
Sleeper.
It.
Sleeper destination.
You know, and you take the train everywhere and you just see such beautiful vistas out the window.
Imagine nice trains, people. Could you imagine beautiful train rides? I can't because we have 10 lane highways, 20 lane highways.
Having taken Amtrak, it's gorgeous.
You
can't even compare.
It's the same, but thank you for calling, Matthew. Please call again.
I know, it makes me want to go back to Europe.
Oh,
instead,
Europe.
Instead, the only travel I have this summer is going to Milwaukee.
Yeah, well, that's the Europe
Chicago.
Of the Midwest. You know?
Yeah, it's basically
the
like...
The Geneva of the Midwest.
All the lakes. I was talking to my mother. She texted me. It'd be nice if you called me once in a while. I'm like,
Mom.
We get the group text, and I get it.
Listen to the pod, Mom. Call the pod.
Get on Instagram and listen to the pod. That's how everyone keeps up
with me. That's how we communicate. We're millennials, all right?
But then I did call her. I was like, hey, girl. I hadn't called her since Mother's Day, so that was a little long.
Mm-hmm.
Just caught up. You know, it's like a lot of times it's just more of her talking to you.
Yes.
And you being like, yes. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
She was funny. She's like, I haven't left the house in 6 days. I was like, okay.
Mom.
I see now why you want me to call you.
Yeah, you gotta listen to the pod, Mom.
She's always doing stuff. Planning to go back up there to the D.C. area at the end of July when my brother Colin, who's out in Texas, should be coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Colin's going to fly into Charleston. We're going to hang out with Dad. Then we're going to road trip up to 95. It's going to be funny.
Sounds terrible.
Listening to a bunch of random music. Colin has eclectic musical tastes. So, which is,
AKA
my twin.
Bad.
You know, I got to spend time with my twin.
You do, yes.
I spent 9 months with the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Then she says... Actually, Colin only has a week. I don't know how long you guys are going to be in Charleston for. I'm going to pay y'all just to fly up. I'm like, but I want to do a road trip. She's like, that's my time.
Oh my God,
Terry.
You've been in the house too long, Terry.
I know. And she's, she's not a shut in, don't get me wrong, but she, the kids,
light,
Nick's kids were gone.
Light shutting in.
Good to talk to her. Call your parents. Get time. Call your parents. They want to hear from you. Or call the lead. We're like your parents.
Wait, we're proud of you.
We're
proud.
You could have done a little bit better sport, but we're still proud of you.
If you haven't called, we're not mad. We're just disappointed.
We're just a little confused.
Okay, but what I'm not confused is that we do need to end this, okay?
Oh.
Yeah, so Gavin, go ahead. Say goodbye.
All right, be like Christine and Matt and give us a shout. 803-563-7169. Let us know where you're up to if you're... in the country, if you're spelunking, if you're hang gliding, if you're just driving around looking for a backup pair of shorts to swap into after a rough day out and about, take Christine's advice. Pack a pair. Also, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We'd love that, too. And you can stay up to date with the latest news on SCTV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
Oh my God, Sims. Oh.
How many people did you kill in a pool because you took the stairs
out?
We
don't talk about that publicly, AT.